Okay, we're beginning here 11 lines down on the top of Ayin Ted and Aleph. The Gemara says, Amarabba Barabhuna Amarav. Asocherta Chomor Lurkov Aleha. Someone who rents a donkey in order to ride on it. Umeitalo Bechatzia Derech. And then it dies halfway through the journey. Notein lo scharo shel chatzi aderech. He has to pay him for the first half of the journey, which was completed. Vein lo alav ela tarumot. And all he has then is complaints against this individual. As Rashi notes over here, the complaint is the fact that he gave him such a low quality donkey or a weak donkey that died halfway through the ride. Others suggest that the tarumot are that he doesn't, we'll see in a second, replace the donkey for this individual, and therefore he's left high and dry in this new location. But the Gemara really wants to understand, Echidami, what exactly is the scenario here? If it's possible to rent out another donkey in that location or to continue on his trip without any problem, taromet mayavidite, then why does he have any complaint over here? Because he has the ability to continue his journey at the same price and for really not much effort. And so why should he have to complain? If it's impossible for him to replace the donkey at this point in time, then why should he have to pay him for the first half of the journey if this guy is now stuck and stranded in this new location? So Gemara says, Olam delo shchiach lagure. It's not possible here to find another donkey easily or to hire a new donkey to go forward. Umishum da'amale. So then why does he have to compensate him? Because he'll say to him, Ilu bayit amete ad hocha. Love Agra Bait the Maitav. Don't you have to pay to reach this location or to reach this point in the journey? Even if you were to make the full journey, this is a stop along the way in the journey, and you would have had to compensate someone to get to this point in the journey. So why shouldn't then I get compensated in this point in time? Now, that's a difficult statement, as the Balei HaTosfot would say. Well, what type of claim is that? Now all of a sudden he's stranded in this new place, and he has nothing to do. He can't hire a new donkey. Why should he have to compensate? He had no intention of coming here. He didn't want to end up in this location. He might have passed this location, but he wasn't going to end up in this location. And so what Tosafot does is he gives two explanations over here as to why there might be something that this individual can do in this situation. The first of which is, V'yesh lomar, da'akamar lo malo shkiach lagure, haino lefil tam dami. That when it says here that it's impossible for him to rent out another donkey, that is at the same price. But if he paid up a little bit, or if he paid a little more, then he would be able to find someone to complete the journey. And therefore, he has complaints against the individual because now he has to pay more for the entire journey. But he still got the benefit of reaching this point, or getting to this point in the journey. So at least he should compensate him for that hana'ah that he got. And that's without the deduction for the increased cost of the remainder of the journey. And even though over here he is losing out a little money, because it's all in ones, all of it, because it only was something that was unintentional, something unforeseen, therefore he can't deduct that from the monies that he already paid to the individual to pay for the higher rate going forward. That's not true by the Poalim. And we dealt with the workers before when they walked out on the job. The reason that we garnish their wages in order to pay for the completion is because they walked out voluntarily on the job. And since they walked out on the job, we hold them culpable or responsible for that. The other hand over here, since it happened complete v'ones, we're not going to hold them responsible for that additional compensation that he's going to have to make to complete the journey. The other possibility, Tosfot says, is kagon shuchalim kor schorato b'makom shemeita chamor v'yaviach ba. He has the ability to sell it in this location where he is currently, and so therefore he's not going to lose out. He could sell it here. The Rashba adds onto that and says, it's not that he can sell it at the same price as the final destination. Here he can sell it at a slightly lower price, or he won't garner as much of a profit. And therefore that's why he's not responsible for that extra compensation to move to the new location. Or the fact is that he has to pay for the first half of the trip is because he will make money over here. He won't make as much money as he would have made had he made the complete trip. But that the Bala Chamor is not chayav for, responsible for, because that's not a loss. That is not monetary loss that he has to compensate for. That's a lost revach or lost profits or opportunity costs. And that he's not going to be responsible for in a case here where there's an ones involved, where it was totally out of his control, or the fact that the donkey died. So again here, the Gemara continues and says, Hey, dummy, what exactly is the scenario here where again, he's stranded halfway down the trip, and he is telling him you got to pay because at least you got to this halfway point. What exactly was the agreement between these two individuals? If he rented it out, a donkey, a generic donkey, to take him wherever he needed to go, He is responsible now to replace the donkey that he gave him originally. Now, whether that's because there was a kinyan originally, or that's because the agreement between them obligates him to ensure that the other person is taken care of, and he's mishubad to do that because he agreed to provide a chamor. But for whatever reason, when he says, I'm going to provide you the moving services, then he has to provide the moving services because he didn't point to a particular truck or chamor to do the job. On the other hand, if he said, this donkey is rented to you, if the residual cost of the donkey now has monies with which to buy a new donkey and replace it, then he'll go ahead and he'll buy a new donkey and replace it. But if not, then he has no responsibility vis-a-vis this individual because he only rented him this particular donkey. He did not rent him a donkey generically. And that means that if this donkey is no longer able to provide the service, he's not obligated because whatever he rented is now gone. So Mar says, look, tzricha, k'she'en ba demeh halikach, there isn't sufficient monies from the residual of this animal, the nevela, the carcass of this chamor, to go ahead and purchase a new donkey and allow him to complete the trip. But, im yesh b'damea, liskor, iskor. On the other hand, if there is money that you could take from the carcass or the residual of this animal and then rent another donkey, then we say to him, go ahead and you have to rent the alternate donkey to replace it for this individual. So, based on that, the scenarios here, it's hard to understand what Rav was speaking about. Rav says when the animal dies halfway through the trip, he says, please pay me for the half of the trip. And he says the other guy has only taromit. He only has complaints over here. What do you mean he only has complaints? In all these scenarios, there is recourse. In the case where he rented him a generic donkey, he's got to replace the donkey, so he has full recourse. In the case where he says chamor zeh, where he says this particular donkey, so fine, if there's not enough money in there to replace the donkey, there still is enough money for him to use that money to rent out another donkey. And if that's the case, he will get to his destination, and that's why he's paying for the rental. So why is there taromet, or why is it that he's stopping halfway and the bala chamor is walking away? Where it says, Rav l'ta'amei, Rav l'shitato, damarav lo mechalinan karno. Because Rav believes that we do not allow you to wipe out the keren, wipe out the principal amount of the individual. If we allow you to take the carcass over here, sell it off, and then use those proceeds to rent a donkey to complete the trip, then the bala chamor will have nothing left from this. He will be left with absolutely nothing and with zero. And that, according to Rav, is unacceptable. Now, how do you reconcile that with the Mishnah? Rashi says, our Mishnah says that you do have to replace the chamor in these situations. That's because the chamor died while it was still in the house of the balim. So therefore, he has to then add on money and pay for a new donkey. In that case, the keren does not disappear. Because in that case, he can take the monies from the carcass, add together more of his own money, and then buy a new donkey. And with that, or with those proceeds, he still has something left, even though he had to add on some money in order to do that. But, on the other hand, over here, where they're on the derech, in the middle of the road, if he takes that money and then uses it for a rental at this point in time, he'll have nothing left of those monies. That would be unacceptable, and therefore, Rav says over here, we want to leave the guy with something. The whole point of the your schirut was that you were renting an object which would remain for the owner. You had rights of usage. You didn't have rights to wipe it out or eliminate the item completely. So that's how Rashi explains the difference between this and the case of our Mishnah. And then the Rosh over here says there is reason to be mechalek between Rav and a chamor stam, because by a chamor stam, he would have to replace the chamor no matter what, even if it wipes out the keren, because he has a shibud, or an obligation, of his entire assets to support this individual for what he rented. On the other hand, in our case here, it's a case of a chamor zeh. And chamor zeh, there Rav worries about kal yakarno, that you're not allowed to wipe out the keren completely. This goes back to actually the Mishnah, where Rashi says our Mishnah applies even in a case of chamor zeh. And therefore, Rashi has to draw a different distinction between Rav's statement over here and the case of the Mishnah. On the other hand, most Rishonim believe that the Mishnah before was only speaking about a chamor stam, and over here it's speaking about chamor zeh. And therefore, they're able to differentiate between the cases in order to distinguish between Rav and the Mishnah. For Rashi, who says they're both cases of a chamor zeh, He has to draw a different distinction, which we just saw before. Dietmar, and here we see this position of Rav, which is played out. Person rents out a donkey, and then it dies halfway. Amar Rav, im yesh bidamei adikach, ikach. If there's sufficient funds left in here to buy a new donkey, and then complete the journey, or even a smaller donkey and complete the journey, that's fine. But the score, al yiskor. If there's only sufficient funds left in the carcass for him to rent a replacement donkey to finish the journey, that he may not do. Ushmol amar, af liskor, yiskor. Shmuel says, even to rent, you're allowed to do that. But my kamiflege, what is the shorish amachloket between them? Rav savar lo mechalina and karno. Rav believes that you're not allowed to wipe out the keren. You're not allowed to wipe out the residual of the chamor. Ushmol savar, machlinan, karno. And Shmuel, on the other hand, says you are allowed to wipe out the residual, and therefore you have to finish off the job that is there. Tosafot over here raises an issue with a Gemara later on, which is that a person who rents out a house, and in renting the house, he says, by it's it. This particular house is what he wants to rent. If the house falls down, then we say too bad on the renter, and what is done, and there is no replacement. Unless, of course, the Baal HaBayit rebuilds a house, then he would be responsible to rent it out to him. But without that, he has no responsibilities vis-a-vis the renter. The question that the Baal Tosafot raises, why over here do we look at the residual value of the donkey and decide with that residual value, do we take care of the renter or do we not take care of the renter? How come by the house that fell down, we don't make that same calculation? Why is the equation different over there? Why don't we say with the stones that fell down and that which is there, you'll sell it, and with that, you'll build a new house. So the Baal Tosafot over here suggests that there's a difference between a house and a donkey. A house that falls down, the only thing to do in that situation is not to sell the house or to sell the land. What you have to do is rebuild the house. And so the items or the raw materials that are there from the original house are, in a sense, mishubad to rebuilding the house. And so they're not omeid l'mechira. They're not up for sale. And since they're not up for sale, there is no obligation on him to actually sell it in order to fund the person who rented the house. On the other hand, the whole purpose of a chamor, especially a chamor that is dead, is to sell the chamor. And therefore, that sale we obligate him to do in order to provide the rental or the service to this individual who was renting from him. The Ran, on the other hand, differentiates between a donkey, which is called a donkey, whether it's alive or dead. And therefore, the donkey is mishubad to this individual because it's still called the donkey after it passes, after it dies. And therefore, he has to use the donkey in order to fund the rental. On the other hand, a house is only called a house when it's standing. Once a house falls down, it's not called the house that fell down. It's not called a house anymore at all. And therefore, the bayit zeh no longer gives him a right to collect or utilize the monies from whatever the mar materials are. The Or Sameach, on the other hand, makes another distinction, which is that the story here is only because it's b'chatzia derech. This whole din of Rav and Shmuel is only true because the renter is out on the road with the donkey. And therefore, there's a responsibility to replace the donkey, even with the monies that are left in the carcass of the animal. On the other hand, if it died at the house of the renter, then there'd be no responsibility whatsoever to replace it. And he says that a bayit, a house, has the same status as a donkey in the house of the renter. Because the house is where the renter is, and therefore there's no obligation to replace it in that situation. The Gemara says, Meitave, is that really true that we aren't Kaliyakarna, like Rob suggests over here? Yavesh Hailan Oniktsats. You had a tree that was given over as collateral to an individual, and it ended up drying up, or it was cut down. Shnehem Asrim Bo. They both cannot take it now or utilize it. Not the creditor who was renting it for its production, and not the person that owns it. Ketzad yaseh. So what do you do in order to deal with the situation in this case? Lekach bo karka. They should buy land with it. This is somewhat akin to nifsei malog, where we want to preserve the underlying principle for an individual, and we want someone else to garner the leasehold or the production of that property. So what do we do when we have monies that come into the marriage, and we want that type of split between the husband and the wife? We purchase land, which gives you both underlying asset, but also productive qualities. So the same thing over here, where we want to replace the tree, which was something that was an underlying asset that had productive qualities, we go ahead and buy land. V'ochel peirot. And then the creditor has a right to benefit from the production of the land or the leasehold on the land. So here is a case where the tree was given over as collateral to the malveh, to the creditor. So the levee, the borrower, owns the underlying asset. The creditor is benefiting from the production of the item because he is a creditor and it was left to him as a mashkon. And it has to be something along the lines of a mashkon disura, the one in sura where it was structured in a way that it's not a problem of interest because it goes or permanently goes into the hands of the malveh, becomes his for that period of time. But if that's the case, when we have the destruction of the underlying asset, we want to buy or replace the asset and give the malveh the same benefits of the production of the leasehold. V'ha'acha, kevin dechimati yovel, kahadra aro lamaro. Wait a minute. In this case, buying land isn't a way to preserve the underlying principle for the debtor. Because when you buy land, land always goes back to the original owner when it comes to the yovel. V'kakali yokarno. And then the karen will disappear. If the karen disappears in this case, then what have you done to benefit the levee? You might have postponed the fact that it doesn't disappear immediately, but once you get to the levee, it's going to disappear. So why is Rav okay with this? Or how does Rav reconcile his position with this situation of the mashkon? It says, Achamai Skinan, the Zavile the Shitin Shnin, that he sold it to him for 60 years. Tamarav Kis Tamarav Katina, Minayin the Mocher Sadeo the Shishim Shana. How do we know that if someone sells his land for 60 years, that that is not subject to the Yovel? Sheinu chuzeret biyovel, that it doesn't go back during the Yovel. Shenemar ba'aretz lo timacher litzmitut. Because the pasuk says, by the Yovel, you may not sell the land permanently. What you learn from that is, mi she'ein sham Yovel, in an instance where there is no Yovel, or mi she'ein shem Yovel, when there is no Yovel that nitzmetet, it would remain permanently in the hands of this individual. Yesham Yovel, but if there is a Yovel, ain't a nitzmetet, then it doesn't remain permanently in the hand of the individual. That's an item that is subject to the rules of Yovel. Meaning if the only factor or the only variable that changes this from being a permanent sale to being a non-permanent sale is Yovel, then this land is subject to the Yovel. But, Yotzta Zosh Afo Pish Ain't Shem Yovel, this type of transaction where you sell it for a fixed period of time, even if there was no Yovel, it would not be a permanent sale. Ain't an its method. Therefore, the Yovel has no impact on it. The Yovel only comes to stop permanent sales. It's in order to indicate or to show Kili Kol Haaretz, that the land belongs to me or belongs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that he demonstrates by saying that you can't sell the land permanently. But if the transaction is structured in such a way where the land is not sold permanently or indefinitely, then there's no need for the Yovel because the transaction inherently has a termination to it. And since it has a termination to it, it has the same effect as saying Kili Kol Haaretz, that you don't have a right to sell the land permanently. What's interesting over here it's 60 years, the Gemara in other places gives an example of longer period of time, maybe 100 years, but you could, in a way, then structure it in such a manner to circumvent the Yovel by selling it for very long durations. So you have to believe that there is some sort of cap or some sort of limitation as to how long you could sell it for and still not consider it to be the smitut. At a certain point, the length of the sale starts to look like a permanent sale, even if it has a termination date in it. The Gemara never explicitly states that, but it seems from the nature of the drasha, as Rashi notes over here, that kan pirish lecha tamo shel mitzvat yovel. Here it's explaining to the reasoning behind the yovel. If the reason is to know that Hashem is the owner of the land and you don't have permanent ownership over the land, then it has to be structured in such a fashion that it doesn't create or simulate the effect of a permanent sale. So it has to be of a duration where it's meaningful that the duration will terminate and the land will go back to the original owners. And that's not subject to Yovel. So in this instance over here, it won't be that it goes back in the Yovel, because they actually put the transaction in place such that the monies that they used from the Mashkon to purchase the property was for a fixed duration, and therefore it's not subject to the Yovel. The Rashba wants to be midayek from our Gemara over here. The fact that the Gemara did not give the answer that he made a tnai in the sale which said that the Yovel would not impact on the land, that means that it's impossible to put in a tnai that will override the Yovel. And the reason he gives is because of what we said here, that the purpose of Yovel is Kili Kol Haaretz, that the land belongs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And when the land belongs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you don't have a right to put in a tnai or a condition in something that you don't own. And therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu governs over here, and the Yovel overrides any other condition that you would place in the Yovel. So even if you were to believe that generally with monetary matters you're allowed to put conditions even if they're now mashakatu, but Torah, nevertheless, with regards to Yovel, you do not have the ability to do that. And that is the conclusion of the Rashba from our sugya over here. The Ramban disagrees and says that the reason this is true here is because it's Rav l'shitato. Rav believes that a person is not allowed to be matneh mashakatu b'Torah, not just b'divrei yisurim, but even b'divrei memonot. And therefore, it's not an option over here to use that as an answer because we're speaking in the shita of Rav. And Rav has that position that you can't be matneh mashakatuv b'Torah. So given that, you can't prove anything from this sugya with regards to Yovel in a bigger picture in a situation where you do believe you can't be matneh mashakatuv b'Torah. The Gemara asked, sof, b'chimatu shitin shnin kadra ara b'moro, b'kakao yakarno. What type of answer is this? Because in the end of 60 years, it's going to go back to the original owner. So yes, you didn't get it taken out during the Yovel, but you still have a problem with Kali Yakarno because in the end, it is going to go back to the original owner when there's a termination of the duration of the purchase that happened over here. And that's a problem for Rav because then you have Kali Yakarno. So what do you have to say we're speaking about here? Bizman, Shein Yovel Noheg. That's been a case where the Yovel is not Noheg. You could have answered it speaking in Chutz Laretz where the Yovel is not relevant. The problem is that we're speaking about a Tanaic work and most Tanaic works are in Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, it's more difficult to answer that we're speaking about a case of Chutz Laretz. So rather, they set it up. It's a case when the Yovel was not extant or no longer practiced, and therefore it's not an issue. Hachanami Mistavro. That makes a lot of sense. If you say it's at a time when the Yovel is in force, and we allow you to wipe out the principal amount, let us chop up the wood right away and sell it off. If we don't care about Kali Yakarno, then the simplest thing to do is to sell off the wood immediately from the tree. Why are we doing this convoluted transaction where we are purchasing land and then trying to keep it around for a while if we don't care about Kali Yakarno? Imishum ha lokasha. The Gemara says, if that's the case, that's not a question. Zimnin deshalmei shnei mashkata mikame yovel. That's not as good a question because there are sometimes that the mashkon has a certain duration to it, and the duration would have been over before the yovel. Inami demato lezuzei uparikla. Or sometimes the borrower comes into money and is able to redeem the mashkon and get the property back. Arba v'chamei shnin mikame yovel. 4 or 5 years before the yovel. So in that case, there is a possibility of the Lovev benefiting from the Mashkon. If you were to sell it off immediately, then you would immediately wipe the Lovev out of the picture and he would have nothing left. In the case where you give it to the other party until the Yovel by purchasing Karka, then even though in the end it will result in the same result, which is the fact that he loses everything or the Karen is gone, but the postponement of the loss of the Karen then gives you the opportunity that the Lovek could benefit from this item, either through paying back the loan and then getting the item till the Yovel, or in a case that the time duration of the Mashkon expires before the Yovel. So in that case, the Lovek will garner some benefit from it. And that will help us in understanding what the Gemara was Havamina was at first versus what it thought in the end. The Balei Tosafot suggests that the Havamina of the Gemara was that when you sold it for 60 years, it was so long, especially given their lifespans, that was almost as if it was a permanent purchase for this individual. And if that's the case, we would view it as not Kali Yakarno. And the Gemara comes back and says, wait a minute, in the end, it still is Kali Yakarno, because when we talk about Karko, we talk about Karen, it's something that you're Maurice to your children. And therefore, the Gemara has to come up with an alternate answer. Others suggest that that might explain the meaning of the Gemara, because originally we thought all that had to happen was that the Lovev got some benefit from this item. As long as he garnered some benefit from the item, that would be sufficient to deem it as a return or not Kali Yakarno. On the other hand, the Gemara comes back and says, sof, the Gemara rejects that type of thinking, and in the end suggests that Kali Yakarno we have to look at like we really thought. Kali Yakarno means the total wiping out of the Karen, and the Gemara rejects it. So here in the conclusion of the Gemara gives you an opening or an understanding into what they were thinking at first, that maybe the Lovev would get some benefit, and therefore would not be deemed Kali Yakarno. In the end, the Gemara comes back and says, wait a minute, but in the end, the principal is gone, and therefore, that's not a sufficient amount of benefit to the Lovev to not be considered Kali Yakarno, and therefore they opt for the alternate answer, which is it's at a time that the Yovel is no longer extant. And now we move on to the next sugya, Tarabanan. Person rents out a boat, and the boat sinks halfway through the journey. Rabbi Natan Omer, Im Natan Lo Ito. If he already paid the money for the rental, he can't take it back. Im Lo Natan, if he has yet to pay for the rental, Lo Itain. He doesn't have to give it. Hey Chidami, what exactly is the scenario where Rabbi Natan's din is appropriate? We're going to see here all sorts of scenarios where it's not applicable. So we have to find the one scenario where it is applicable. Ilema Besvina Zo V'yayin Stam. So when we're speaking about here, he rented the boat to take his merchandise to a new location. The yayin, the wine, is representative of the merchandise. The boat is what he rented in order to transport the merchandise. So if the agreement between them was, I want this boat in particular, the yayin stam, and I'm going to put in some merchandise in there. He didn't specify the merchandise. Im natan amaylo itol. If he already gave the money, why can't he get it back? Namele, because he can say to him, Havli sfinata, bring me back the boat. You said this particular boat. If you have this particular boat here, I'll pay you the money. Da'ana maitina chamra, because if you have your boat, I'll bring wine, because I'm allowed to put any generic merchandise in there, because I didn't specify which merchandise I was going to put in there. So if you live up to your part of the agreement, I can live up to my part of the agreement. But since you can't live up to your part of the agreement, because your boat now is at the bottom of the ocean, therefore, you don't deserve to get paid. You fail to keep your side of the agreement, and therefore you should have to refund me all the money over here. The Balei HaTosafot point over here, when we say that he hasn't paid yet, or he's entitled to a refund, we're talking about the entirety of what he would have paid, or any money that he had paid. We're not speaking about here the second half of the journey, that he has to at least pay for the first half of the journey, and the question is, does he have to pay for the second half of the journey? Because the Balei HaTosafot say this is different than the case of the chamor before. In the case of the chamor before, when the chamor expired, wherever it did, the merchandise of the individual was still intact. So he didn't suffer necessarily any losses on his merchandise, but he had ended up in a place where he had to, according to the Balei HaTosafot, either hire someone for a little more money, or he could have sold his merchandise at a slightly lower price. But in that instance, he still benefited from the transport to that location because his merchandise was still intact. So in that case, we say he has to pay for the first half of the journey. Over here with the boat sunk with all of his merchandise on it. So he's lost everything in this instance. So you can't say to him, oh, pay for me for getting you at least halfway there, because the halfway there did nothing for him. So in this instance, when we say that he doesn't have to pay, or that he paid already and would get a refund, we mean a refund of the entire amount, not just of the half. And we also mean when he has to not pay, he doesn't have to pay for any of it in this case. Ella, what is the case here? It must be a case of Sfina Stam, V'yayin Zeh. The case where he rented him generically a boat, and this individual said, I'll put my wine, this wine, onto the boat. Im lo natan, amai lo yitain. If he has yet to pay for it, why shouldn't he have to pay for it in this instance? Because, namele, the owner of the boat can say to him, Havli ha'u chamra, you bring me that particular wine that you wanted to transport, because you said this wine is what you're going to transport. V'ana maitina sfinota. And I'll provide a boat, a replacement boat, because I only offered a generic boat. So in that situation, I can live up to my side of the agreement. You can't live up to your side of the agreement. And since you can't live up to your side of the agreement, it's not my fault that we didn't get there. And therefore, you should have to pay, in this instance, for pay for the entirety of the rental. And as Rashi notes on the top of the Amud Bet, Yishalem kol ha-sachar. We're not talking about half journey over here. We're saying that he have to pay for the entire journey. And Tosafot on the bottom of the Amud Aleph says the exact same thing. He says, Yesh lo letet kol ha-schirut. He has to pay the entire rental over here. Shrei kana ha-maskir kol ha-schirut b'mishichat ha-socheret ha-svina. Because there was a kinyan here through the socher's taking of the svina. And that kinyan obligated him to pay the entire amount of the schirut. Oh, afilu b'lo mishicha. Even if there wasn't a kinyan mishicha over here, since the owner can carry out his part of the agreement, but the renter can't because his wine's at the bottom of the ocean now and he can't bring the merchandise he said he's going to transport, it's his bad luck that it happened. And it's as if he's walking out of the transaction. Therefore he has to pay for him. Not the first half he has to pay fully. The second half, you have to pay for him like a Puel Batel, where he doesn't have to work at it, but he still gets paid or compensated for that second half. And Tosafot, it says over here, V'kasha, amayitein lo klal, mechatziya derech shlo halach. Why should he have to pay for the second half of the journey that he didn't take at all? Afilu ki Puel Batel, even if he pays them like a Puel who's not working, still, why does he have to compensate him at all? Because we saw before, with regards to the rain on the field, that if the workers were hired to draw water or to irrigate the field and then it rains, we said it was a pseudo de Paulim, something that was not foreseeable for the Balabayit. We don't, in that case, obligate him to compensate the individuals. It was the bad luck of the Paulim. Why don't we say the same thing over here? This is an unforeseen circumstance. And why is the owner of the boat entitled to compensation over here? So the Balei Tosafot say it's different. In the case of the field before, when it rains and it waters the field, then the Baal Bayit doesn't have to pay the schirut, the salaries of the workers, because in the end, they're not working, and it's their bad luck, and therefore he doesn't have to pay their salaries. Over here, when it comes to the owner of the boat, yes, he's not doing the remainder of the trip, but he lost his boat. He is suffering serious financial loss over here because he no longer has a boat. So we don't say to him, don't pay anything. You have to pay for the schirut. But this needs some sort of explanation. Why is the renter responsible for the loss of the owner of the boat? That's not some sort of obligation or responsibility that he undertook. But the truth is, that's what the Chazon Ish concludes from here. That when a person rents an item, that there is included in that rental a certain amount of responsibility for things that happen to this item. Since there is danger involved in transport, the individual knows that there are risks that the item could be lost on the way, or that it could be totally wiped out. And he pays or agrees to pay for the schirut, knowing that that could happen, or knowing that that could be the outcome. And therefore, his responsibility to pay here comes from the fact that he knew there was a risk that they could lose the boat in this circumstance. So far we haven't found the situation in which Rabbi Natan's din is true. The Gemara continues to look and says, Amar Rav Papa lo mishkachet la ela b'sfina zo v'yayin zeh. The situation that Rabbi Natan is speaking about is only in a case where he said, I'm going to give you this particular boat, and the individual promised this particular merchandise. Because in that case, neither one has a strong claim against the other one. Each one of them can say to the other one, you provide what you were supposed to, and then I'll continue on the journey. So therefore, since neither one has the upper hand, and we say, Motzi mechavero ala baraya, then the status quo stays in place. And that means if he already paid, he can't take the wages back. If he has yet to pay, then he doesn't have to pay because nobody can prove anything over here. Aval. But if the circumstance was a Sfina Stam, V'yayin Stam, the case where they both generically said, I'm going to rent you a boat, generically, and he says, I'm going to put on merchandise or wine, generically, Chulkim. In that case, they split it between them, meaning that he has to pay for half of the journey. We'll discuss that in 1 second. Now let's go back to Rabbi Natan's din. The Baalei HaTosafot are not certain as to why the din is that when he pays the rental income up front, that he doesn't have any recourse to take it back. Don't we say that Eina Schirut Mishtalemet Ela Basof? Schirut is only paid at the end. The obligation to pay only comes at the end. And since they never reached the end game, why is he responsible to pay for the whole journey? Or at least only make him chayav to pay for the amount of the journey that was done, or half the journey. So what the Baalei HaTosafot say is that once the individual puts the schirut down, then he either is nitretzeh, he gives in and gives it to the owner completely, because that he feels is the right thing to do and a part of the transaction. Even though he won't be obligated to pay for it in the end, nevertheless, he gives it to him to be his immediately. On the other hand, Rashi's grandson, the Rivam, Rabbi Yitzchak, or Rabbi Meir, suggests that when the Gemara says over here, if he paid already, he doesn't get his money back, or if he didn't pay, he should pay, is only talking about the first 50% of the trip. Nobody believes that in the second half of the trip that he has to pay, or if he already paid, he would get refunded for that part. The question is about the first half of the trip. If he already paid for the first half of the trip, he has no right to take it back. On the other hand, if he didn't pay for the first half of the trip now, he doesn't have to pay for it. And so therefore the Rivam sees that the din of Rabbi Natan references the first half of the trip and not the second half of the trip, and thereby avoiding the questions that Tosfot are raising over here. Tosfot, on the other hand, defends the pshat of the Gemara, like Rashi and others, who suggest that the payment that we're discussing over here is for the entire rental or the entire duration. And the reason he says is because the Amotzi Mechavero Alav Araya basically says Mazalcha Garam, that your bad luck caused the problem. Since we're both unable to fulfill our obligations over here, your bad luck is what caused you not to be able to fulfill your obligation. And since the din is Amotzi Mechavero Alav Araya, you are subject to that din over here, and therefore I should keep all the money that you gave me. Or in the other direction, if the person didn't pay yet, he'll say your bad luck caused that I don't have to pay you because Motzi Mechavero Alav Araya. But then we said afterwards that if it was a Yayin Stam and a Sfina Stam, where they both can provide the item or continue on the journey, therefore they are on equal standing, and Chokim, they split it. So for most of the Rishonim, who explained that the case before was a case where Rabbi Natan's din is you keep all the money, and we're speaking about paying for the whole trip, then we say chokim, it means you pay for half the trip. You pay for the first half of the trip which you took, you don't pay for the second half of the trip which you didn't take. On the other hand, for the Rivam, who says that the Gemara here and Rabbi Natan was speaking about the payment for the first half of the trip, everybody agrees you don't pay for the second half of the trip. The Rivam has a safek over here whether the chokim means 50% of the total schirut, or does it mean 50% of the 50% you would be chayav in the case of Yayin Zeh and Sfina Zeh? And therefore, he thinks maybe it is a quarter that has to be paid. Half of the amount that you would have had to pay if it was Yayin Zeh and Sfina Zeh. In the case of Yayin Stam and Sfina Stam, you would pay half of that amount, which would be a quarter of the total schirut that you were obligated to pay. Now the Gemara continues. Tarabanan, asocher ta Sfina, uferakala, b'chatzi aderech. Someone who rents out a boat and then unloads his merchandise halfway through. He pays him for the amount that he traveled. And then the owner of the boat has nothing to say to him except complaints. Again, Hefidami, what is the scenario over here where the individual who just walked off the boat halfway through the trip doesn't have to pay for what he had hired the boat for the entire trip? If the owner of the boat has the ability to rent it out, then am I itlay taromet? Why is he complaining? The new person will get on the boat. He'll continue on his journey. He'll make the same money. If he doesn't have the possibility of renting it out, then and now he's stuck. Kulei agra boyishlume. Then the person who rented the boat should have to compensate him for the entire amount. As Tosfot knows over here, kulei agra doesn't literally mean all of his agra, but it means kepoel batel, because he's now going to not have to do the remainder of the trip, so he'll get paid like a poel batel. He had him commit to take this journey, and then he walks off halfway, he's backing out of the deal, he should be responsible for the payment of the rental income for the entire time. It says, Olam de kamashkach lagura. The situation in which he can't find a replacement renter. Elamai itle taromet. So then why does he have complaints if he's going to get a new person on the boat and continue on? Mishum rafsata de sfinata. Because of the way Rashi describes it over here, the wear and tear on the boat from unloading and loading the boat up. Had he taken a single journey with one person, he would only have to load and unload once. Here, where he has to stop midway and then take someone else on, he has to unload the first person, then reload the next person, so he has the double amount of loading and unloading, which causes wear and tear on the boat. So he has a complaint about that wear and tear on the boat. That's not just a complaint, that's a real financial claim. Here he's going to have wear and tear on the boat. He should have to pay financially for that wear and tear, that extra depreciation that he has to undertake. So what does it mean that he unloaded it? So that he took it off, the way Rashi describes it over here, he added on extra loads along the way. So he originally had put a condition in that he could put in as much as he wanted, he could add stuff along the way. And the compensation would depend on the amount of load or the amount of weight that he was carrying. So he is going to get compensated for adding on this extra load. So then, elamai taromet. So then why does he have any complaints about this? Number one, it was a part of the original contract. Number two is he's going to get paid for it. So what is he complaining about? Mishum shinoi data. One is that there's a change in his mind. The way Rashi describes it over here was he originally had a plan, a flight plan or a sailing plan, and he thought he'd be back by a certain time because they were going to go straight. All of a sudden, this guy in the middle that tells him he's going to stop over here at this port, that changes his whole plan. And so even though he's entitled to do it, he complains because you should have told me up front, I could have planned better for it. Inami la ashlo yitera. Or for the extra ropes that I have to buy now at the more expensive price, because now that the boat is heavier, I need to tie the boat and let it go further into the river or into the ocean so that there's a deeper space because the boat is dipping or going deeper into the water because of the weight. Therefore, I have to buy new ropes in order to deal with that. And the ropes over here are more expensive. Had you told me up front, I could have bought the ropes cheaper. But now that you're telling me only later on, I have to buy these more expensive ropes. So that's according to Rashi what the complaints are over here. You can see that Tosafot quotes Rashi over here and says Vekasha, he has issues with this explanation of Rashi, and therefore he favors the Rabbeinu Hananel's Perush, which is the Parka de Tonesh Mokhir Schora B'Sfina Lacher. He sells the merchandise on the boat to someone else. And that's what the Shinui Adat is over here. The Shinui Adat over here is the fact that there's a new owner of the merchandise. And the boat owner can say to him, listen, you I can work with. I don't know about this new guy, whether he's going to be easy to work with or difficult to work with. And that's the Shinui Adat. So that's what it is. Internally, he unloaded the boat. Internally, he redeemed the boat, which means that he sold the merchandise to someone else, but they never unloaded or loaded the boat. So then what's the Ashley Ravrave? The Ashley Ravrave are the ropes to allow the first owner to leave the boat and take his stuff off the boat, his personal items, and to allow the second individual to come back onto the boat who now purchased it. So that's why he needs the ropes in order to do that. Rivam, on the other hand, gives a different explanation over here, which says that the Gemara's worry at first was that the loading and unloading of the boat would cause depreciation and wear or tear on the boat. So the answer is that instead of unloading or loading the boat with the ropes or the heavy stuff, they undo the merchandise or they untie it inside the boat, and then they unload it slowly, little piece by piece, and then they reload it piece by piece. So in that instance, there's no real claim for depreciation on the boat because there's really no wear and tear on the boat. So then what is the problem? It's either because of Shinui Adat, which again is like the Rabbeinu Chananel, where I have a new person here who's coming onto the boat, who's renting it, or is going to utilize the boat. And Ashley Ravrave is if the new guy brings on more weight, even though I'm going to get compensated more for it, I don't have the ropes to deal with it. And therefore, I'm going to have to buy the more expensive ropes here in this location rather than having the ropes up front. Those are three different explanations as to what happened over here that he only has a complaint about, but he doesn't have monetary claim against the individual, either according to Rashi because he added on extra weight on the way, according to Rabbeinu Chananel, he sold it to another party on the way, or according to the Rivam, he unloaded and loaded the boat in a manner that didn't cause depreciation or problems for the boat. And therefore, for Rashi, the problem is the Shinui Adat, which is the change in the port that you wanted to stop in. And the Ashley Ravave is to deal with the bigger weight on the boat. And both the Rabbeinu Chananel and the Rivam, the Shinui Adat is the new owner that I have to deal with. And the Ashley Ravave is to either deal with, according to the Rabbeinu Chananel, unloading and loading the personal belongings, or the possibility that the new individual is going to bring more weight onto the boat. Okay, now the Gemara continues. Tarabanan, a socher tachamor lirkov aleah. Person who rents out a donkey to ride on it. Socher miniach aleah ksuto. He's allowed to put his clothing on it, the renter. Lignuto. And his drink. And whatever liquids that he needs to bring. Umizonot shel ota derech. As well as the food that he will need for the derech. So he takes all of his provisions, including food and clothing, for the entire trip. Mikan ve'elech. From there to forward, chamar me'akev alav. The donkey driver can say it's too much and you can't bring it. Chamar, on the other hand, the donkey driver, meniach alav se'orim, v'tevin u'mezonotav shel oto ayom. He's allowed to put on the barley and the straw and the food for that day. Mikam ve'elech socher me'akev alav. If he takes more than that, then the renter has a right to stop him. So now, just in terms of ksuto, that's the girsa that Rashi has. They were Bali Tosafot bring the alternate girsa of the Rabbeinu Chananel, which is instead of kisuto, it's kasato, which means his pillow. That he's allowed to bring his little pillow, not his big pillow. That has to do with what you think a definition of a kar and a keset is in other places in Shas, where Tosafot argues both of them are types of pillows, just one is bigger or smaller than the other. And based on that, the girsa that the Rabbeinu Chananel had here was not kisuto, but rather kasato. The Gemara wants to know, hey, Chidami, again, what's the scenario here? Either Shchiach the Mizban, if there is an ability to buy stuff along the way, food and provisions along the way, Chamar Nami Le'akev, then why can't the donkey driver stop this guy from taking all of his provisions for the whole trip if he can buy it on the way? Beidolo Shchiach the Mizban, if it's impossible to buy provisions on the way, so Cher Nami Lo Le'akev, then how can the renter stop the donkey driver from taking whatever he needs for the way? So Amar Rav Lo Tzricha the Shchiach the Mitrach Ule Mizban. Me'avna de'avna, that it takes some effort to find the provisions, but from, we'll call it, large area or large city to large city, you have the ability to replenish your supplies if you make an effort. So, chamar darche le mitrach le mizban, the donkey driver, that's his business, that's what he does, and therefore his undertaking here is to replenish his supplies when he gets to the new city or the bigger cities. So, cher lav darche le mitrach. On the other hand, the person's renting it. He's not looking at every city then to go and have to replenish his stuff. He's hiring the donkey driver to get to a final destination. He's taking what he needs along the way. So therefore, he won't go out of his way, the mitrach lemizban, to undertake or make the efforts to go buy something because that's not necessary for him over here. Tanu Rabbanan, asocher tachamor lekov alei aish. Person who rents out a donkey in order to have a man ride on it. Lo tirgav alei aisha. he may not have a woman ride on it. Most of the Rishonim over here explain that the problem with putting the woman on it is that either the woman was heavier than the man, or typically a woman is heavier than the man. I think I would have argued over here that the reasoning has to do with the way that they ride. A man rides on the donkey itself, whereas a woman rides side saddle. And the side saddle is more difficult for the donkey. And therefore, if he rented it for a man, he can't have a woman ride on it because that's a bigger undertaking for the donkey. Then Isha, if he hired it out to have a woman ride on it, Rochev al-Aish, then a man can ride on it because that's a lesser burden on the donkey. Bisha, ben gdola u ben ktana, a woman, whether she is big or small, as those with notes over here, generally men aren't so different in sizes because they're usually bigger. Women have that differential between bigger and smaller, and that's why it discusses Isha gdola and Isha ktana. Afilu mi uberet, even if she is pregnant, vafilu menika, or even if she is nursing. So if he hires the donkey to transport the woman, all of these scenarios are included in that. I mean, it doesn't matter how big or how small the woman is. It doesn't matter whether the woman is pregnant or nursing. All of those are considered to be valid uses of the chamor if he rented it out for a woman. Mar says, Hashta menika amart nuberet mibaye. You tell me over here that she can take her baby when she's nursing. Then you have to tell me that when she's pregnant, you're allowed to do this? It's obvious when there are two separate entities that if that's included, then certainly a mi'uberet should be included. Samara Papa, Papa says, no, the explanation here is mi'uberet vehi minika kamar. It's a case where she's both pregnant and nursing at the same time. I mean, that's the additional item. It's not that it's one or the other, but when he says vehi mi'uberet, means that not only was she nursing, but she was also pregnant. Samara Baye Shmamina. From this you would conclude, benita akarsa tikla, that the fish, the weight of the fish is determined by the intestines or by the stomach. The mai nafkamina, what does that matter? The mekachumemkar, in transactions, if you're going to buy a fish or a large fish that has a large stomach, don't do it by its weight because most of that will be lost when you take out the stomach or the innards, and therefore it's not worth it. So that is the way that the Gemara reads, the way that we have the Girsa here. The Balei HaTosafot say that it's very strange because the Gemara in many places uses a terminology or a literary style which is lo zu af zu. Not only this, but also that. Why can't you say the same thing over here? Not only this, but also this. So even though, yes, once you know the second item, the first one is obvious, but that's a literary style of presenting information. So the Balei Tosafot therefore bring the alternate girsa of the Rabbeinu Tam, which was the other way around, which is that if you told me that when she's pregnant, she can go on, certainly when she is nursing, she can go on. And the reason being from the Gemara in Shabbat, Chai Noseh Et Atzmo, that a person that's alive and separate helps to carry his weight. And therefore, a woman with a child separately nursing is lighter than a woman who is pregnant. And that's the Gemara's question. If you told me already that she was pregnant and can go on, then certainly when she is nursing, then she could go on because the pregnant woman is heavier. And that's exactly what Abaye's conclusion is from here, which is that a pregnant woman is heavier than a woman who's carrying a baby separately. And from that you learn that the weight that is contained within the stomach or within the womb of the individual bears down or brings more weight to the individual than if it was actually separate. Whether that's because of the additional fluids and blood that are included, or is that because simply the inability of Ubar to help with the carrying of his weight versus a child which can help or Chai Noseh Et Atzmo. Then Tosfa goes on to try to defend the girsa that we have in place, even though it could have been read as a lo zu, ab zu case. Okay, we're going to stop here at the bottom of Ayin Tet Amud Bet.